Thank you for joining me, Astra, this Saturday, December 13 to 14, for Talking About You with Astra from Seattle, Washington, USA. This is your car accident radio channel, bringing knowledge and support about auto insurance, employers, short and long-term disability, personal injury claims, surveillance, print and electronic tools, and much, much more. Most employees trust their employer benefit packages at face value. But is this a good thing? How much fine print can be found in your policy? Are group insurance the same as individual policies? Unfortunately not. Employer-sponsored insurance has less protections and is more difficult in getting fair settlements when activating a long-term disability claim, which leaves many employees with a fake sense of security or safety in receiving benefits when they're needed most, such as in a car crash. And this is the reason why it's so important to check out the fine print in those group policies. A lot of them have clauses like not paying after 2 years, and long-term disability isn't typically just for 2 years. So make sure that you take time and evaluate who you actually work for, the level of their integrity, and their willingness to pay out on insurance claims, since they are actually not only your employer, but your insurance company, and you want to make sure that there's a level of safety there that you can truly depend upon. Place your questions and comments on Twitter, hashtag Astra's Radio Show, or Talking About You with Astra on Facebook. Be sure to call in to the show today at 718-766-4385 with questions, concerns, or experiences. I'm listening to what you have to say about your car accident journey. Be sure to visit Astra's official car accident site for additional information. That's astras.blogspot.com. Enjoy the show. And again, thanks for listening. Most people opt into their employer's group disability policies. Employees expect what is included in their benefits because most people don't believe it will be necessary to use. At some point, it will perhaps be decades before this becomes true in specific cases. Yet for many, the time for use comes too soon, way before they are financially stable. In fact, most employees spend their life living paycheck to paycheck, holding their lives and families together on a thread. I suspect many employees do not know that their short-term disability lasts for 3 to 6 months, typically, and there is a waiting list between the short-term disability and the activation of their long-term. How much do you have in your savings account? Is it enough to tide you over? Some people find themselves in desperation because they have no savings and too many bills to pay. Although still injured, they attempt to return to work. Some find humiliation because they're not well enough to perform at past levels. They find themselves between a rock and a very hard place to live. The ones who are able to hold on until their long-term disability is hopefully approved, they find some employers attempt to terminate this main source of income after 2 years because of a clause placed in the contract. Remember, the contract was likely written by your employer, who makes sure to include clauses in their best interest, which leaves your needs in a precarious position. However, if you selected an individual disability policy, more options are available that protects your interests. The rules and regulations are determined by your state and will provide a local recourse for bad faith actions through your state commissioner's office or state officials. But group disability policies by your employer is governed federally by ERISA rules, which in my opinion have been written in the interest of corporations. This legislation, which was written by Congress, does not allow employees to be compensated for bad faith behaviors by employers and gives no reasons to operate in the best interest of their employees, from my perspective. If taken to court, employees are not compensated for delays, denials, harassment, or intimidation encountered, which may have cost them their way of life due to the financial loss, not to mention the physical and emotional strain that may have been encountered. Please, please write your congressperson and ask them to reform ERISA. In my opinion, the pain and suffering this legislation has caused injured and sick individuals and their families is close to immeasurable. Many companies are aware of this fact and use it to their advantage. If you are disabled right now and receiving short or long-term disability through a group policy, please read your policy carefully. Be prepared for the worst and hope for the best in your employer. Your way of life just might depend on it. Disability policies from employers are a lot like divorce. You never know if it's going to be fair and civil or whether you'll be wishing for that prenuptial agreement. Some end well after the relationship terminates, while some go on like a song that never ends. Some employers are self-insured, meaning that they take on the risk and the rewards, that is, your premiums. They typically contract out a portion and do the rest themselves. Perhaps they like to keep someone else in the middle in case it comes to blows, while others have the total responsibility for insurance. Either way, read your policy well in advance to know whether it's worth your time. You can decline it and pay a little bit more for an individual policy, which affords you the ability to have a fair opportunity to have your voice heard. ERISA does not provide fair treatment. It's their way or the highway. Still, if it's the only coverage you have and it is a group coverage, don't throw away the towel if it never comes up. Do try to obtain the best possible outcome. This was the reason you actually signed up for the policy. If your company is self-insured, depending on how the contract is written, which is why it's so important to take a look at it, they may not be operating in your best of interests. Both employers and insurance companies may be seeking to throw your disabled body to the curb. Ouch, and it hurts. With nothing left to even make a help sign. The objective might be to get rid of you ASAP. So figure what you're going to be dealing with by talking to others in your company before you become disabled. Talk with others who are dealing with the same issues if it's also an insurance company. You can also look up court trial documents for similar cases with your employer or insurance company. The key point is to remember to stay informed. Determine how past employees have been treated. This will give you some idea of what to expect. Remember, you signed up for disability insurance in case someone or something unexpected happened, and a car accident is definitely that. Use it. Educate yourself regarding the situation and the behavior of those you must now deal with. Enlist an attorney if you need to, if it's beyond your scope, or at least talk to others who have gone through the process. Again, comments that we're going to be talking about are my opinions and have no association with the writers of the articles. From time to time, as I typically do, I'll be stopping and commenting on some of the sections. This article comes from ehow.com, and it's titled Harassment Laws in New York State. And it's by Kimberly Best. She's an eHow contributor. And harassment, quote, harassment is broadly defined in New York statutes. In New York, harassment is a crime, and the maximum penalty is imprisonment up to 4 years. Each of the four types of harassment in New York has an intent element where the defendant must intend to harass, annoy, or alarm the victim. For the more severe forms of harassment, the victim must have reasonably become apprehensive. And to me, right from the start, this is me interjecting here, from the start, that actually is what you see with employer disability harassment. From my point of view. So let's take a look at each one of these sections. It says, number one, separations of degree. In the more severe form of harassment, when a victim has reason to be apprehensive or perpetrators can do hard time, some as long as 4 years if the crime includes things like bias or repeated offenses. Many harassment cases, of course, fall short of that severity. Accordingly, the New York Penal Code defines 4 degrees of harassment to cover graduated levels of seriousness. Something immediately caught my eyes was where it said, when a victim has reasons to be apprehensive, perpetrators could do hard time. From my perspective, many employers who harass the disabled in order to prevent a payout of a disability claim do this. Because most of the time, from my perspective, they actually do cause an apprehensive nature to become what the injured are subjected to. Many become concerned about leaving their homes. Many become concerned about what happens to them in public places. I just wanted to say, very well rings true from my perspective, and I'll read it again. It says, when a victim has reason to be apprehensive, and if you talk to anyone who's actually been subjected to employer disability harassment, I personally believe you'll find that component there. Second degree of harassment. When someone applies physical force to another person, follows that person around in public places, or engages in conduct intended to alarm or seriously annoy the person, this constitutes second degree harassment. As in all harassment cases, the defendant must have the intent to harass, annoy, or alarm the person, and the course of conduct can be no legitimate purpose. Second degree harassment is a violation of the maximum punishment is 15 days in jail. I want to stop and go back to some of this. It says, when someone applies physical force to another person, and I want to also mention the psychological physical force. When you have a number of harassers surrounding you, it's like your actual personal space is not only encroached, but they are applying a psychological intimidation to wound you. And to me, that's really a clear-cut case of harassment. I'm going to read the second part of this. Follows that person around in public places. And I think that's very important because many times disability harassment, they will start before you even hardly get out your door, and they'll follow you to your wherever your car. You can see them walking up and down your street. Certainly, anytime they get a chance to, they'll sit next to you in a movie theater. I mean, it's endless. They'll sit next to you in a restaurant. They'll go with you to the bathroom. I mean, what does that really say? If that's not harassment, I don't know what is. Okay, I'm going to go back and read a little bit of this. Let's see here. Engages in conduct intended to alarm or seriously annoy the person. And I think that's 100% disability harassment. From my perspective, that is the goal, intended alarm. If they keep you in a hypersensitive mode, that's that fight-flight reflex. Makes your body a lot more difficult to heal if it's injured. It keeps you off kilter of the things that you're trying to address. It keeps you confused. It causes chaos. And that's, in my opinion, the goal that they're trying to do with that. And seriously, annoy is just an understatement. And that's a come in a lot of my tweets out there at Estra's Blog Tips. You'll see where I say focus, focus, focus. And the reason why I continue to say focus is if they can distract you and annoy you and intimidate you, then you're following and doing things that they want you to do instead of doing the things you need to do to get better and to move on with your life, wherever that might take you. I'm still in the second degree harassment section. It says, the defendant must have the intent to harass, annoy, or alarm the person, and the course of conduct can have no legitimate purpose. Now, this is the part that gets me because it always seems like they're throwing in a clause to help companies out, no legitimate purpose. What is the legitimacy to intimidate and harass and victimize the disabled 24/7? That's not legitimate, in my opinion. There's no legitimacy in actually intimidating someone until they give up their disability claim. That's not legitimate to me. If they're looking for documentation, most times, I mean 99.9% of the time, that information has already been documented. Their goal is to not pay out that claim and to do whatever is necessary to do that. If that means aggravating that disabled person, making them furious to react so that they can get something on them, or creating problems or trying to set up stages that could force that disabled person to react in a way that they could throw something at them. Those are not things that I believe are legitimate. I think it's cruelty. I think it's mean. I think it's malicious. And I think these people who do this, or companies, or insurance companies who show these type of bullying behaviors, need to be held accountable for it. I'm going to go down to the next section. It says, first degree harassment. Quote, harassment in the first degree, a Class B misdemeanor, occurs when the defendant's conduct results in a victim being placed in a reasonable fear or physical injury. The maximum penalty is 3 months incarceration and a year's probation. For example, what could this be? You could be driving down the road, and you could have several of them in cars surrounding you. And let's say that you get lost temporarily, and you can see that they're hoping that you're lost, and that they'll have a chance to actually get you by yourself. There's a problem with that, because you're going to have reasonable fear of physical injury, because you don't know what these people might do. Many injured people have faced, from my opinion, a reasonable fear of physical injury. And that's why they do such strong intimidation. They make people, in my opinion, fear so much that they relinquish their rights and benefits in order to get relief of harassment and intimidation. And then it has second-degree aggravated harassment, which is different than the previous one. Aggravated harassment in the second degree, a Class A misdemeanor, can occur in several ways. Someone who communicates or attempts to communicate with another person with the intention of causing alarm or annoyances faces a charge of second-degree aggravated harassment. It may also be charged if the defendant applies physical force because of a person's race, color, national origin, gender, religion, age, disability, or sexual orientation. In addition, second-degree aggravated harassment occurs whenever a defendant is convicted of first-degree harassment for the second time in a 10-year period. A conviction can mean up to a year's incarceration or 3 years probation. And I want to, and that's the end of that section. But I want to say I am so happy that New York, and I hope other states will also do something about the harassment and intimidation. An example for this one would be like you were constantly receiving emails or Twitter messages stating derogatory things and trying to egg you on to do different things that they want you to do. Harassers do that, but you don't have to follow their actions and you don't have to do what they want you to do. You have a choice to make. You can either be harassed to the point of despair, or you can choose to focus on yourself, document what they're doing by video, by picture, anything they send you, anything they leave at your home, all of those things you keep. And when asked about harassment, tell people, say, I'm being harassed because of my disability claim against my employer. Tell people. If you're silent, it's not going to stop them. They're just going to say, oh, you're going to take it. So stand up for your rights and say, no, I deserve respect and I deserve dignity and I deserve my benefits. All right, the next one they have is stalking. And it says, third degree stalking occurs when a person intends to harass, annoy, or alarm someone and acts in ways likely to cause the victim to fear physical injury, sexual assault, kidnapping, or death, either personally or to a family member. This is a Class A misdemeanor, which may bring up to a year's imprisonment and 3 years probation. Now, in my opinion, stalking is something that employer disability harassment is known for. I think that's they eat and sleep stalking. They attempt to stalk you in ways you can't imagine until it's happened to you. You would think that they would find other ways to spend their money, but evidently they found that it's beneficial to them to stalk the disabled constantly. I think most of it is because, at least in my opinion, most people don't want anyone to know everything about them. That's just irritating. You want to know everything about you. But if somebody's walking around with everything you do, they go everywhere you go, they see everything that you do, they feel like they can necessarily stop your life and put you in this little jar. And it's a glass jar, so they can see all around you and encircle you and harass you. And there's something wrong with that picture, first of all. But that's what they do. My suggestion is to do what you will do. And let them watch. And don't be intimidated. That's your life. You own it. You do what you need to do to get well, to feel better, to socialize. Being disabled doesn't mean that you're a prisoner, and don't let harassment and intimidation by anyone stop you. This is your life. You only have one life to live. Just one. Just yours. And they should not have the right to harass and to intimidate you at the levels of what this article talks about. And I think it's really fantastic that New York State has listed it out this way. Should anyone have the right to do this to another individual? No, they should not. Should Congress allow this in the ERISA for companies because they pay out disability claims? In my opinion, no, this is wrong. And I hope that if you feel the same way, that you will talk to your Congress representatives and say, please help us change ERISA. We had no idea this was going on, but now that we do, we want it to change before something happens to us and we have to live through this. I want to extend a special thank you for joining me today, along with Audacity, InternetArchives.org. Be sure to participate with a new survey out there. It's called Happier Holiday Seasons. It's only with your input can we show the experiences people involved in a car accident live with every single day. For participation, you can do a search on hashtag Estra's Accident Survey. Thanks so much. The call will be answered only with your participation. Be sure to join me in these efforts today. Only with your support can we demonstrate, again, the experiences of people involved in traffic collisions. Take the 3 minutes necessary to tell us about how you've been affected. Let's meet back here next Saturday, same time, same place. No matter what you are going through, keep your head up and never give up. The information contained on Talking About You with Estra is not all-inclusive in assisting individuals discerning information related to a car accident. Individuals seeking specifics on their case should seek the assistance of an attorney. The First Amendment of free speech has allowed Estra's radio show to state her opinions in addition to her brand, guest, and callers, which reflect life experiences. Talking About You with Estra is in no way liable for misuse of the material. For more information, contact Sunlight Publishing, LLC, P.O. Box 69082, Seattle, Washington, 98168. Thank you.